Welcome to the Serie A Canada podcast, the inaugural edition of the Serie A Canada podcast. It is your host, Dan Riccio, alongside Alessandro Sampogna, two big-time Juventus fans. We'll try to share as best an objective opinion as we can, but there's just nothing like talking Serie A soccer for us, so we hope we can provide it in an entertaining and, more importantly for anybody who's listening to this, an English style of Serie A analyzation. Which, you know, we've come to learn that here in Canada or anywhere that speaks English or possibly another language, it's hard to get your calcio news.
Or at least to get the accurate stuff.
Yeah, at least to get accurate stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that gets lost in translation. And hopefully we try to do as best we can sorting through it and providing you with the best Serie A English news via podcast as we can. Big day today in Italian soccer, Al. It was huge for Juventus. They had their coach and two significant parts of their team implicated in the Italian betting scandal, or calcio scommesse, as they've been calling it. Antonio Conte received a 10-month ban, while Leonardo Bonucci and Simone Pepe were acquitted of the charges against them. The big thing, obviously, is that Conte will not be with the team as of right now for the next 10 months, and we've yet to see how that's going to affect the team, but it's going to start tomorrow with the Supercoppa Italiana. What do you think?
Well, I think that from everything I've been reading about what's been coming out of Torino right now and Beijing, you know, the team, it's not affecting them. They're saying it's not something that's going to change how they play. It's not something to motivate them. They have their regular motivations, or at least that's what Buffon said. And, you know, the team, Carrera has been a disciple of Conte for a long time. He runs the Conte system, the 3-5-2, and he knows what to do. And I'm sure Conte has his time with the team. He'll have a lot of time to talk to the team on what he wants to see for them tomorrow. Even though he can't be at the touchline, he'll be in the stands, and he'll be able to watch them, and he'll be able to talk to them afterwards. Not directly afterwards, because he won't be allowed to get into the change rooms at any time, or at any time throughout this ban, however long it may end up becoming. But he, you know, the team's playing it off that it's just a victory, you know, that Pep and Bonucci were let off and they were acquitted, and that, you know, Conte is still going to be a part of the team. He won't be there on match days, technically, but he'll still be there and he'll still have a presence. You know, they say that he can't have any communication with the team, even through third party, so as if to imply iPads or phones or anything like that, but we don't really know what goes on in change rooms, and maybe he will have somewhat of a presence. Maybe there'll be some video correlation between Skyping between the
Yeah, coaches. But I think at this point it's not worth the risk for Juventus to even go anywhere near.
Well, we will never
like
know.
That.
I'm sure they could do stuff that we won't know about.
We can acknowledge that it's not worth the risk,
yeah,
especially with how the FIGC seems to have it out for them at this time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's no question that there's a little bit of something going on there. I mean, you can say whatever you want. I'm not trying to be biased, but Leonardo Bonucci was, you know, they wanted a 3.5-year ban for him, and in the end, he gets acquitted. To me, that's saying something. You know, that's saying like, what are you trying to fish out of here? And that's just something that has really bugged me about the whole thing. But it is what it is. At this point, Conte implicated himself. You know, it's been said in the Italian newspapers that during the Euro 2012, when he was investigated, he said to the investigators, you know, I figured it out after it all happened. You know, it became clear to me what was going on, but, you know, I didn't have any involvement in it. And that alone got him, you know,
the suspension,
because he was
involved.
Because
it was his due diligence.
Basically admitted to the charge that he was given, which is knowing of it and not reporting it.
Which is the same thing they were trying to charge Pepe with as well.
Yeah, but Bonucci, for the record, was charged with being directly involved in fixing
and having a part in the match.
Yeah, and having a part in the fixing of the match, according to Andrea Mazziello, whose testimony is no longer credible in court, let's just say, because his story's all over the place. So Pepe and Bonucci get off because of that. Another player that was acquitted, Montreal Impact forward, new Montreal Impact forward, Marco Di Vaio, Not sure exactly what his involvement was. He was one of those guys that was charged with...
Well, there was a lot of Bologna games on the suspected game list.
Yeah.
So and he was the captain of the team at the time, so I'm sure that, you know, he would... If those games truly were fixed, I'm sure he had some knowledge of it, maybe a part in it.
Yeah,
we'll never
and
know.
That's what he was charged with, was knowing of it and not doing anything about it. It is what it is. Juve is going to miss Conte at this time for the rest of the year. We don't know how it's going to affect Champions League at this point. I'm pretty sure they won't have him on the sideline for UEFA Champions League.
I can imagine they won't. They haven't said anything about it yet, but I couldn't imagine him being able to coach.
Yeah, we can't confirm it, but I doubt that they would try and push their luck that far.
No.
But
there is August 20th, the date of the appeal, and which a lot of people in Italy suspect the 10-month ban will be taken down to at least 6 to 3 months. And hopefully, he can get 3 to 4 months, and that wouldn't be too bad. He'll be back in time for November when the team just starts getting in the thick of things. So,
exactly. And that's what we're all hoping for. We want, you know, as a Juventus fan, obviously, I want Conte there. He's brought the team back to glory. But, you know, I would think for any Calcio fan, just a general Calcio fan, that you don't want that, you know, that Juventus fan to say, oh, yeah, well, we didn't have Conte, so that's why you guys won the Scudetto this year kind of thing, you know? Because, you know, those excuses will come about and people will argue that way. But I don't want any of that. I want a level playing field for everybody, and it's shaping up to be a great season by all accounts. But to finish off what we were talking about, the Calcio Scommesse, some of the teams that were implicated and suffered punishments, Siena has been deducted 6 points. I don't know about you, but they've lost Mattia Destro now, and now they're deducted 6 points. They didn't really fare too well last year in avoiding relegation. This could be a death sentence for them.
In my rankings, I'd have them pretty low, so I don't suspect them to be able to stay in the Serie A, and even if they do, it'd be barely by their teeth. So, this isn't helping their cause, that's for sure.
Sampdoria, one of the teams that we've both liked their transfer season, and they're losing 1 point along with Torino.
That's not going to affect it. 1 point doesn't really make a difference.
Yeah, 1 point really doesn't make a difference. I believe they were.
And to be honest, considering how Atalanta, who was in the original match fixing scandal from last year, started the season with a 9 point deduction, they still finished in the top 10. If you're a really good team, these point deductions don't really matter.
Well, yeah, in 2006, Milan was deducted 8 points in their Calciopoli scandal. I think they finished fourth that year, actually.
Oh, my
but
bad.
They won the
Champions League.
They won the Champions League that year. And so, hey, anything can happen. We know how the national team does under the...
under scrutiny.
Under scrutiny in match-fixing allegations. So, next is Lecce. They were relegated from Serie A, but I think we should mention here that
Because of their involvement in the scandal,
the owner being involved in the scandal, they were relegated to the Lega Pro, which is essentially Serie C2.
Which is the fourth division, for those that don't understand that.
So the fourth division of Italian soccer, they've been way below the ranks. And you and I were talking before, and you suggested that Lecce should maybe go the Fiorentina way and just fold the team all together and restart.
I definitely think there's obviously a lot of corruption within the organization. And like Fiorentina had to do back in 2002, it's sometimes you have to dissolve the organization and start anew. And maybe Lecce should go that route because the ownership is obviously tainted. I know they're planning to change ownership as of right now. And everybody within the organization can't be trusted. They've been... clearly implicated in this scandal as having a heavy hand in the match fixing. So, you know, more than just a fourth division relegation, they should probably just fold the whole team all together and start a new association and for the town and try and get some new faces going. They never really had that strong of a history in Italian soccer, so, you know, they could start anew, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I enjoyed watching Sergio Cosmi on the sidelines of the Lecce team all the time.
Well, he is the coach of Siena right now, so.
Oh, well, at least we'll still get Sergio Cosmi in the Serie A. He's always entertaining to watch on the touchline, that's for sure.
Yeah.
More news, though, coming out of the Serie A. Good news, actually, is that they came to an agreement with the players on a collective bargaining agreement, extending it for, a signing for a year, meaning that we won't have a strike like we had last year.
Unlike in North American sports where these collective bargaining agreements get signed to 3-5 years.
Or 10 years in the case of the NFL.
Yeah, and that's a big deal. For the Italian soccer, 1 year is actually a very big deal. It's probably the equivalent to the 3 or 5 year deals. Because the last 2 years, if you do not remember, for you soccer fans, the Serie A has been delayed and 1 to 2 weeks each past season because of not coming to terms with the collective bargaining agreement. So finally getting one done before the start of the season is something we're not accustomed to in the last few seasons, and I'm very happy about that we're going to get started on the right day.
But no matter what the situation, I mean, it's not like... It's not going to be like the NHL or hockey.
No,
where, or
they don't
the NBA.
Go on those long
They're not
going to
go
yeah.
on a long stretch. The people will not stand for it.
No.
There would be riots starting in Italy
no
if
doubt.
There was no soccer on Sunday mornings. I mean, even the Pope could not get soccer abolished from Sunday mornings in Italy or Sunday afternoons. So I don't think that they don't want to go down that road.
No.
That's for sure. Juventus leaves Alessandro Del Piero's number 10 vacant. This is maybe a big deal, more of a big deal for Juventus fans, but it's kind of interesting. There's certainly players that we thought might have taken it. Marchisio, Buffon was even suggested that he might take it. Vucinic wanted no part of it. He says he likes the number 9. But Jovinko was a player that said he wanted it, and he wanted to fill those shoes.
I know we both feel different on this. I feel he deserves it already as it is. You feel that maybe he should go the year and prove that he deserves it. I understand where the organization's coming from. They don't want to put pressure on a player to take up that number, and they don't want to hear any negative views from the fans, who obviously will always hold Alessandro Del Piero close to their hearts. And he's been one of my favorite players growing up as a child. But, you know, Jovinko, it's rare for Juventus and as a Juventus fan to have a player come from the city of Torino and be brought up through the Juventus soccer system and youth academy, and to be somewhat of a looking like a, to be a star. And I haven't seen this throughout my 16 years of loving Juventus and longer. So, you know, I think we should have just gave it to him. Last year, he points in regards to goals and assists in the Serie A, he had more than any Juventus player, and not playing on Juventus. And he's talked so much about how much he loves Juventus, how black and white is in his veins. I think that, you know, we should just gave it to him, but they didn't. That's their decision, and I believe he will earn it. He will prove to everyone this year why he should have had it in the previous season, this upcoming season, but...
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I feel like he needs to deserve it, and you raised a great point. They don't want to put that pressure on him. They want him to succeed. They paid the $11 million for him from Parma. They want him to put him in the best position possible to succeed, and... The immense pressure that would be put on him if he were to take the number 10 right away is just, it's not worth it, in my opinion. So I think it's best that they stayed away from that. Italy named quite the squad for the upcoming friendly on August 15th against England.
Well, it is a friendly.
It's a friendly. It's the first match after the Euro 2012. It will be a quarterfinal rematch with England.
England didn't name that great of a squad either, though.
No, and I think it is partly due to the Euro 2012 just finishing up. Teams are getting ready for their season. You know, they're not too many of them want to let their players go away in the middle of their preseason, getting set for, you know, their club season. So Prandelli was in a tough place. And, you know, good on him for going. And he's picked 8 uncapped players. And he's really going to get a look at some of the younger talent Italy has to offer and see what they maybe have for the future. And, you know, he's got a lot of young players to look at looking ahead to 2014.
Personally, I'm not totally against that decision. I would have probably done the same thing. I'm happy as a Juventus fan that he didn't take Buffon. You know, our guy needs a rest every now and then. But, you know, there's maybe 2 or 3 names I wouldn't have taken, and they are part of the 8 uncapped players. But not because I would have taken someone capped. I probably would have taken someone who also has never played for Italy. It's just that I don't feel that they were good enough to be on the Italy squad, regardless of what game it is. And I'm talking about names like DeCelio from Milan. He hasn't proven himself for Milan yet, so I don't understand why he should be given a chance on the Italy squad just yet. He probably won't even see the field that day. They do get a lot of subs during friendlies, so maybe he might get 10 minutes but he definitely wouldn't be in the starting lineup anyhow. So I could see where Prandelli's coming from, just naming the squad just for the hell of it, just to, you know, give it a run, see what you might see. Lippi did some of the same when he brought a team here to Toronto. He brought a lot of guys who weren't on the World Cup team the following season. So, you know, it is what it is. Players right now are trying to just settle in with their squad. They haven't seen their squad in weeks, and they just got with it. So, you know, they got a whole season ahead. So a lot of guys who really would be there weren't at the disposal, but a big name that is there is Mario Balotelli. So
yeah, that's big. But let's just quickly go through the whole team. Goalkeepers, Andrea Consigli of Atalanta, one of
I've always liked him. I always thought he has a lot of potential. And when you see him play, he looks really confident in the pipe. So
Mattia Perin from Pescara. We don't know much about
him.
He's
from the Juventus youth system.
A lot of Pescara players were last year. Salvatore Sirigu from Paris Saint-Germain.
Who is due for a contract renewal.
Ooh, that's exciting for any Serie A team looking for a goalkeeper. Defenders, Ignazio Abate, we saw him in the Euro Cup. He's a Milan player. Francesco Acerbi, only 23 years old. I believe this will be his first cap. He's also a Milan defender.
He's coming highly rated off a good season with Chievo. So, you know, he's somebody I definitely would have taken with the squad.
Davide Astori of Cagliari is a player who
heavily linked to other teams right now.
Yeah, every team seems to want him right now. Move. I think, you know, he would be a big help on the Milan defense, which looks totally porous right now. Federico Balzaretti, a new Roma player, will be there. Mattia Di Ciglio, like you mentioned, from Milan. Daniele Castaldello from Sampdoria. I don't know where that came from.
He was a Juve youth system.
I know as well.
He is 28 years old.
You know, my favorite to start in the game, Angelo Agbona's there. He was on the Euro squad as well, but didn't get any chance to play. And Federico Peluso, who's also been heavily linked with a move away from Atalanta. Midfield, Alberto Aquilani. Where does this come from? Where does this come from?
He's played with the national team, but, you know, in the past, in tournaments, but I definitely wouldn't have picked him right now. He hasn't done anything as of late. You know, he had a decent season with Juventus 2 years ago. When he played, they were undefeated, but he didn't play much. And this year for Milan, he didn't do well at all. They didn't have a good season, and which is why they didn't renew. As they say in Italian, riscatto. They didn't finish off the purchase, and which is why he got loaned out to Fiorentina once again. He's been constantly loaned out. He's not finding a place in a squad. I don't know how he could find this place in an Italy squad if he can't find this place in a club squad yet. So I wouldn't take it.
I think it's safe to say that Prandelli was picking at scraps at this point. You know, he didn't get a chance to pick the players he truly wanted. Well, I don't think they really wanted the best squad there. So Daniele De Rossi of Roma is going to be there. Alessandro Diamanti, who played fantastic, and he's one.
I think De Rossi will probably be captain that day.
Yeah, and for sure he'll probably be captain. By the looks of it, he's definitely the most capped player I can tell from the rest of the squad. Antonio Nocerino will be there of Milan. Great, wow, there's a lot of Milan players on this team. Another Juve
youth system
guy. Andrea Poli from Sampdoria, who was actually just purchased by Juventus today, but will be loaned back to Sampdoria. Ezequiel Scalotto, who had a fantastic season with
Atalanta. He's a great player. I definitely would have taken him on the squad. I just don't know how he has played with the Italy youth system, but he's not born in Italy, so I don't know how he definitely feels about this. So.
And Marco Verratti finishes out the midfield.
Yeah. We're going to get a chance to see him on the big stage right now.
In the Azzurri blue, not the Paris Saint-Germain blue. It still hurts me when I say that. But moving on, Mario Balotelli will be there. We spoke. He'll start probably. Mattia Destro getting his first cap for the big club.
And I'm very happy about that. I'm sure he deserves it. He had a great season with Siena last year. He's ready for the big stage. He's being signed by Roma for a lot of money. So, you know, I'm happy to see him there. He should be there.
A non-traditional Italian name in the next pick. That's Steven El Charouet.
Well, it's about time, though. In my opinion, every time I've seen him play, when he touches the ball, he looks like a fantasista, as they like to call him.
Now, he's of Egyptian descent, though.
I believe his dad is Egyptian. So his mom is Italian, okay. Yes. And he's born and raised in Italy, and, you know, he's from the Milan youth system. And
he's going to play a big part in the club this year, it seems.
And I would put it on him, too. You sell Ibrahimovic, and you bring this guy up now. That's just how you do it. That's how you bring, make a winning football club for years to go. You get rid of the guy who's older and can bring you in some money, and you bring up the younger guy who looks ready to do it. And last year, he did score a lot of crucial goals for Milan. He didn't score a lot of goals, but he scored the goals that mattered. And he scored when it mattered, and he played in a lot of big games for them. And I think he's ready to start showing that he can be a threat for the Azzurri and a threat for Milan. And that's a great pick.
And finally, Manolo Gagliardini, who's another player who's been heavily linked with a move away from Atalanta to Juventus mainly. I thought the move might have been permanent, but
it was almost permanent. The deal was almost set, but he was going to be straight loaned to Bologna right after the move, and he wasn't okay with the loan. Okay. In the end. So the deal has fallen through, but doesn't mean that Juventus is still not tracking him. Allegedly, they still plan on getting him at some point before the end of the deadline.
Yeah. So, but another great pick. And it just goes to show, you know, people talk about Italy not having great young stars. We just named
I wonder
you.
What the average age is on this team. It's definitely under, like, 26.
It's definitely under 25. But, hey, this should be an interesting match, the one against England, to see a lot of this young Italian talent Prandelli will have to choose from. Inter lose 2-0 to Hajduk Split at home. They still move on in the Europa League as they won their first game 3-0.
With highlight goals by Coutinho.
So they end up winning 3-2 on aggregate. I don't know. Is this something to be worried about? I've heard Stramaccioni, the coach of Inter, saying that, you know, we still need stuff to do. We still have a lot of work to do. This is a squad that's still in transition. I don't know if they're ready to move back into the top four yet.
Well, I'm sure they took that second game a little lightly. Let's all be honest. They were at home. They were up 3-0 from the first game. I'm sure they didn't go in there heavily motivated. I think a lot of guys were already thinking about the last 90 minutes just to get out of there and do whatever they planned to do that night. So I don't think they took Hajduk lightly. In the first half, where Hajduk got their first two goals. And I think in the second half, Inter just clamped down and just shut it down. And Inter, a lot of players on Inter have said that they're going to play hard in the Europa League and they want to win in the Europa League. And I believe them. I believe they have a good chance to do it as well. They got, compared to other Europa League teams for now, they have a better team than most. So, and they are the number one, by the bookmakers, they are the number one odds or the number one favorite to win it. But
really?
The Europa League, all the competitive teams are not fully in it yet because the third place teams in the Champions League group stage do get dropped down to the Europa League in January. So we don't know every team that will be in the Europa League, and they will be Champions League caliber teams. So it will get a little tougher.
It's a lengthy tournament.
It's a very lengthy tournament. In January, it will turn into a different tournament, as they always say. So we'll see how that goes.
I really feel that Inter are trying to, you know, really make a run at this trophy, because why wouldn't you? I never understood why players from top teams would say, you know, this doesn't really matter. We saw Patrice Evra do it last year with Man United after they were dropped out of the Champions League in the group stage. It just doesn't make sense to me at all. But
no, me neither. I don't agree with that either. You're in a competition, you're in it to win it, and any competition.
Exactly.
All competitions bring in money for the squad, and all competitions wins are celebrated by fans. So it's you should be in every competition to win, whether it's Coppa Italia, which I know a lot of teams play their B squads for, and whether it's Europa League. That's my opinion. That's your opinion. But
the Coppa Italia, it's more so that the top teams want to get some of their, you know, starting 11 just a rest on the long, grueling
season. And I'll agree with that for sure. And, you know, every team has 40 to 50 players, so you do want to let those guys see what they got too. So I'll agree with that. But, you know, you see later on in the stages if they truly care. Milan against Juve this year, they didn't really play their top lineups in the last few games. And that's why they were out, and Juve went to the finals. So, you know, we'll start to see how that shapes up.
Milan lose 5-1 to Real Madrid in New York.
It was in New York. I think Milan was all, like, you know, confused by the bright lights or something.
Yeah, they were more worried about trying to get Kaká to come back to Milan than they were about playing the game.
Yeah.
Right, so we'll move on. Udinese play Braga in their Champions League qualifier.
Well, Braga is a good team from Portugal. They've been consistently making European competitions for the last few years, and they've been around second, third place, fourth place in their own league, and trying to keep up with the big boys of Porto and Benfica. So they won't be a walkover like Hajduk Split was for Inter. You know, Udinese is going to have to really try and bring it. And I don't know right now if they can, considering they just keep getting rid of their top players. They are bringing in a lot of money for the club, and they do try and regenerate it by buying younger players, and that's a great system. You know, that's a money ball system that works in baseball. And
it's
it works,
business system. It's not a winning system.
But it has produced winning for them in the last few years. They've been consistently getting that third spot. So, you know, they don't win the Champions League qualifying game.
Again, it's a lot better of a draw than they had last year against Arsenal.
Yeah, definitely a lot better.
If they were to get an Arsenal or somebody of that ilk,
they would have no chance right now.
They would have no chance right now.
And especially if they were to lose Armero.
Yeah.
If they were to lose Armero, who was in the top five for assists last season in the Serie A, you know, I don't know who would give Di Natale the ball right now. So it'd be really tough.
It also begs the question, how much longer can Di Natale do it? Because he's old.
In my honest opinion, this is Udinese's last chance to ever see Champions League soccer. I don't think they have the chance to make the top four this year, not with the current team they have. I don't think they'll even do anything to even shape it up in any way before the end of the transfer deadline, because they've never been that team and they won't be that team. Every indication
they've made
given,
quiet
so.
Signings, a few guys from Brazil, nothing that, you know, not players that any of us have ever heard about. But you know, if they show up for Udinese,
they were
year,
the team that did make Sanchez, who he is, Samoa, who he is, and a few other players. So maybe these Brazilian guys could become those players again. But, you know, I just don't see it happening, not with the way Roma has stacked themselves up and Napoli has stacked themselves up. Already with the other big three of Inter, Milan, Juve, I just don't
see. Tina's figures to be better exactly. Squad. Lazio was among the top three all year until Miroslav Klose went down. It's going to be tough for Udinese.
Very tough.
Transfer news. Roberto Mancini, manager of Man City, says offers for Mario Balotelli, but he's not leaving.
And I wouldn't let him leave if he was my player.
No, neither would I.
Even with all the stuff that he does off the field, I'd still keep him. He's young. He's only going to stop doing that stuff the more we go along, hopefully, for his
he's only
for him
get
and
more mature.
Sake. And, you know, he was, until January, was averaging a goal per game. It went down slightly a bit after that. He fell off a little, but he's picked it up in the Euro, so he's short, like he's still going to be what he's done. He's won so much in his career already as a team player with Inter and with Man City. You know, the guy is a proven winner, and he wants to win with Italy, and he says he wants to win with every other team he plays for. So, you know, I would love to have him on my squad. I know that will never happen, and I'm sure that any other coach would want to have him as well, and that's why he's getting a lot of offers for him.
There's so much to talk about Juve. The ongoing talks about Armero, we don't know where they're at right now. They say they're at an advanced stage, but they've been saying that for weeks.
I feel that they probably have a number in place, but I think Juventus is trying to work other avenues because I think the number's a little high.
Fernando Llorente of Atletico Madrid, rumored to go to Juventus.
The last thing I just heard is that deal is probably going to fall through because Real Madrid is now involved and Real Madrid's offering big money while Juventus is still trying to get guys on the cheap.
Yeah, I still think it's more of Beppe Marotta, director general of Juventus, really putting a lot of smoke and mirrors. I don't know if Fernando Llorente is a serious target. His contract does end at the end of the year. So it looks like Marotta is targeting these players, but if he can't get them at a price he wants, he's not going to get them.
And I wouldn't blame him. You know, Juventus, although there is said to be a lot of cash at their disposal currently and a lot of money within the bank and their budget, you don't go drop it on one player. They don't have Barcelona money and they don't have Real Madrid money or Manchester City money or PSG money. You don't go drop all that money on one player. It won't.
And the FIFA fair play rules or the UEFA fair play rules won't allow you to do that in the next few years.
It won't if you don't have the money. Juventus has the money. They could do it. It wouldn't go against the FIFA fair play rules. It's just not something I would do, and I wouldn't spend my whole budget on one player the same way I wouldn't spend my whole budget on a belt.
Plus, the way Antonio Conte has really put this team together, they're more of a team. They don't have that one superstar. Del Piero was not their superstar last year. Maybe Andrea Pirlo played into that, but he wasn't expected to be a superstar when they picked him up last year.
When they picked him up for free?
Yeah, when they picked him up for free. Andrea Poli was bought by Juventus today. Don't know the actual figure. He was bought from Sampdoria on a co-ownership deal, but will be loaned straight back to Sampdoria, who absolutely need him in their campaign to stay above the relegation, I think.
I think it's just a move looking towards the future, just like all the other Juventus moves they've made this offseason, so.
Yeah, we could talk on and on. There's so many. Giuseppe Rossi possibly a target for Fiorentina?
Well, Fiorentina's looking for a striker. They've made it known. They've talked to Babel from Liverpool. It's not coming through anymore, so they're turning their attention to Rossi. They feel they can get him cheap because he's still going to be out for another 4 months, and that's what they're going to target. They want to have a striker on their team. They want to have a top-name striker because they currently don't. They have a few guys from Colombia and Brazil that they just brought in, and El Hassami from Ajax. You know, they don't have a big-name striker, and I think they just want to use it to appease the fans because they have a strong fan base. So they're going to try and get Babel or Rossi or Alejandro Gomez, who I think would be a great signing for any team.
And we know he's been heavily linked to Liverpool in recent weeks as well. David Pizarro will play alongside Alberto Aquilani in the Fiorentina midfield.
The Fiorentina midfield is getting pretty stacked up, and
they got a lot of options at least.
They got a lot of options, and Pizarro is coming off the bench for Man City. I'm sure we'll probably not have that problem anymore. He'll probably be a starter for Fiorentina.
Nigel De Jong is on Inter's radar.
Well, the rumors are that they've offered $10 million, and Man City is highly considering it. So, you know, if I was Inter, that's a move that I'd definitely try and make. He's a consistent player. He holds down the midfield. I don't know how much longer Cambiaso could do that for them and Zanetti, but he is notoriously known to throw a leg out at somebody. So
nobody will ever forget the 2010 World Cup final.
I'm sure he'll get a red card here and there, but you know, some of the best players do, so.
Speaking of Man City players on Italian team radar, I think we forgot to mention Alexander Kolarov on Juve's radar. If the price for Armero isn't negotiable.
What they're saying is that Juve's going to be talking heavily with Man City in the next week to try and get Dzeko as well for a cheap price, but they've offered $6 million for Kolarov, and they're going to wait and see how that works out. If they don't take it, then they're going to head back to Armero.
Borriello to Milan?
I think it's a great move. I think from what I'm hearing, they're going to take him on as a loan. He has a $4 million contract for the next 2 years, and Roma doesn't want to pay it. They're paying enough strikers for this season, and they're definitely going to try and offload him. So
I think enough strikers is like an understatement.
Yes.
You look at their list of forwards, it's like it's endless. And I know some of them are like winger forwards, but still, there's so many players on that Roma squad at the moment. They have to get rid of somebody.
I think watching Borriello a lot this season, obviously when he was playing for Juventus, he played every game because allegedly he's one of the best practice players in Italian history because he looks very good in practice, and Conte is somebody who's all about practice. Seeing Borriello on the field, though, he actually was always positioned very well. He didn't finish very well for Juventus, only got a couple goals.
He had so many chances.
He had a lot of chances, but I think with Milan, he'll actually fit in a lot better, a team that he was raised by and owned by a long time ago. He's been a top Serie A goal scorer in his life. He's held that title twice for Genoa. So he can do it again. He's only 29 years old, or 28 on the cusp of 29. I feel that, you know, he's still got some of his best years ahead of him. I think it's a very smart move for Milan, who's cash strapped, as they're telling the media right now. I don't believe they really are. I think it's just a ploy for them to try and get somebody late at the end of the summer, Mr. X, as they like to call him every summer. But as of right now, they are cash strapped, and just like they got Zapata on loan, Borriello's another good loan. But you know, for Borriello, this is something that he's going to want to try and prove that he can play on the big stage again.
Quickly on Cristian Zapata, because we didn't get to it, and a couple days ago, Milan signed him away from Villarreal, who was relegated from La Liga, on loan with the option to buy for, I think, $6 million after this year. Really, I mean, I know he played well with Udinese, but just the sounds of a guy who was part of a defense that got relegated from La Liga just doesn't...
I think that whole team had a lot of problems going on, though.
I know Giuseppe Rossi left and Forlan left, and
I don't know. I think he'll be all right. He'll work all right for the defense, but they need a lot more than just Zapata.
Yeah, exactly.
Needs a lot more on defense.
He's not going to fill the void of Thiago Silva at all.
Neither will Acerbi.
Thiago Silva's record for defending in the Serie A, his tackle efficient rate was just out of this world. Moving on, as we end our first ever inaugural podcast, if that makes any sense, first ever inaugural podcast, Supercoppa Italiana tomorrow or in about about 10 hours from now.
It probably might have already passed by the time you listen to
this. Yeah, we've definitely not really much point on mentioning this. But personally, what I feel about the game is that it's definitely a glorified friendly. And we've seen that they play it all over the world at this point. They've been to play it in America. They've played it in New York. They've played it now in Beijing.
Played it in Qatar.
In Qatar. So that just tells me they don't really... It's a glorified friendly. And teams are still in the midst of their preseason. It's really just the start of a, you know, a bar of what we can expect, maybe.
Well, pretty much that is what it is. I think that it's a little bit more than a friendly because I think a lot of the players want to win, especially in this game, compared to maybe the previous seasons.
Well, Napoli and Juventus had just fantastic games last year. The 3-3 game, the first game they played in the Serie A, was...
very entertaining.
It was so entertaining.
Probably one of the most entertaining games of the first half of the season.
Of the first half, maybe even the whole season. And the Super Cup final was fantastic as well. For Napoli fans, at least. But Juve didn't play that well. Storari didn't play that well.
No.
But Buffon will be playing tomorrow. And, hey, anything can happen. Anyone can win. But it's a good chance to see maybe how close Napoli is to maybe contending for a Scudetto.
I feel that Napoli's made all the right additions. I think the move of selling Lavezzi, getting some money, and then bringing up a player who's almost the identical player in Insigne is a great move, and that's smart management on their part. But I just don't think they're ready yet. Cavani just got back from the Olympics. They're still trying to find their place. I feel Juventus is a lot more ready. Everybody that they're playing tomorrow has been guys that they've been using throughout the friendlies besides Buffon, but I think Buffon's ready any day and every day of the week. And I think that they're going to be ready to go. And my own personal prediction is that Juventus will come out on top. And this is coming from a very real Juventus fan, as in that I'm a realist. And I don't just say things just because I am a fan. I am a fan of the game. And I feel that Juventus will be more prepared and more motivated after today's sentencing to try and prove something, that this isn't about betting and anything like that. This is about winning and playing good soccer and not losing.
And some of the players have vowed to dedicate this game to Antonio Conte, who won't be on the sidelines. But for sure tomorrow, and at this point for the next 10 months.
Well, the Napoli players have actually said that they're dedicating this game to the fans, so they're fans. So.
Tifosi.
Both teams are going to be playing for something, that's for sure.
Both teams will be playing for something, and that is the Super Cup of Italy. And it's a revenge game for Juventus, hoping to avenge the final of the Coppa Italia back in May. This was the first ever edition of the Serie A Canada podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back for another one. We'll do continuous previews of the upcoming Serie A season. We'll get more into that in the next edition. Be sure to tune in for that. SerieAcanada.blogspot.ca is where you can find our blogs and where you can learn more about what we're going to talk about on these upcoming podcasts. Until then, we'll see you next time.
Thank you.